You haven't heard about the McCrispy yet. Well, then, you probably haven't heard the sweet silence after the first crispy bite either. Go try it for yourself to hear the best not sound you've ever heard.
Welcome to the Bureau of Citizen Detectives, the officially unofficial podcast for Yellow Jackets on Showtime. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And today we're talking the season finale, season 2, episode 9, Storytelling. Aaron, how'd you feel about this episode?
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. You know, there's a lot that I really liked about this finale, and there's a lot that I really didn't like. A lot that made me wonder how in the hell are they going to continue this plot in season 3 in any kind of the understandable way. And the real unfortunate thing is it's not like, cause I saw, it seems like there's a lot of people saying the teenage timeline is still 100% okay. It's the adult timeline. It's bonkers, but I feel like I've got kind of major problems in both timelines. I will say that I don't know that these are fatal problems because, you know, they are leaving things and I think a good and interesting place, they are still finding ways to put shocking deaths into the series, which I think is it's hallmark and something they kind of have to keep doing. It'd be kind of really lame if no one important dies between seasons, you know, 1 and 5, right? But boy, that the police showing up to Honey Cult Central and finding one of their detectives shot in the trunk post-mortem, and another a middle-aged woman overdosing in the woods with the leader of this religious institution being institutionalized herself. Like, boy, it feels like a thread a person could pull and just unravel a whole fucking mess. And I'm like, it seems hard to believe, but the one thing I will tell you, people that are want to believe that this show is good and it's 90% of it's there and it's just maybe they had a couple exuberant swings for the fences. I had similar problems at the end of season 2 of a little show called Breaking Bad, where Vince Gilligan and company did what I thought was a shark jumping moment of building up suspense and mystery into a reveal that was just cosmically, in my mind, stupid. And Breaking Bad went on to recover and become one of the greatest shows of all time. So there is precedent, in my mind, for a real wrong turn, literally at Albuquerque, and things still end up being okay. But whew, what do you think, Jim? Are you feeling any of this?
Yeah, so I didn't feel the same way about Breaking Bad, but I really do feel the same way about this. I think there were some big asks of me as a viewer in this episode to just go with them, and I don't know. I don't really want to just go with it. I want to be convinced that all the characters are doing things that I think they would do, and that would actually work. Unless you're going to tell me next season the story of Walter tried this thing, Matt didn't take the bait, and it all came down on Walter's head. I might believe that, and then it all comes down on Misty's head and Shauna's head and everything, and it just crumbles out from under them, and they all end up going to jail. I don't think that's the story they're telling, though. I think they're trying to get me to believe that Walter has some master plan, and Matt's going to take that bait, and it's all going to work out for them. And this was the master stroke they needed in order to get out from under this Adam situation that's been haunting them all season. I just don't know if I buy it. I also don't think I buy these adults falling so easily back into this hunt. I also don't know that I buy Nat's spiritual conversion as a teen. There's so much here that is like big swings that is only tenuously set up and established and explained that I am really hard pressed to take any of it seriously. It feels like this show is leaning from what we would call prestige over to the pulp side significantly in this finale. And I don't know how I feel about that.
Yeah, I do. So here's another possibility. There is another possibility that these women are all insane and none of this stuff is going to hold up to police scrutiny and they're all going to be in jail. But the adult timeline seems to be happening at a rate to where, like, the first entire season took place in like a week. I think this entire season takes place in a week. It takes a while, even when there's cut and dry evidence, for the cops to show up a lot of times, unless they literally find you with a gun covered in blood at the scene of the body. You know, it's going to take them a while to roll up with the bracelets, especially when you got an idiot like Matt running the show. So, like, it could be that these are all, we understand, fatal errors that are not going to hold up to scrutiny, but it's going to give us enough time for this thing to kind of drunkenly lurch from storyline to storyline in the adult. But, like, I guess it's like, will that be satisfying to see, I keep coming back to Lord of the Flies. This is one of the touchstones. Like, they want to be like a gender bent Lord of the Flies. To me, Lord of the Flies is not dominated by, like, is it a supernatural event? It's all a psychological, like, what happens when young boys get taken into the woods with no supervision. They're all easily influenced and peer pressure, and they all kind of still are thinking magically because they're on some levels children. And I think that's like, the Yellow Jackets is like, what if the survivors of the Lord of the Flies, you know, had to continue to live mundane lives and what that looks like? And like, I could see that all just, you know, you think that they survive, you dodged a bullet, but you just can't, like, it's not that they brought back the wilderness. It's just that they're complex emotional beings and they're not built to process this kind of crazy shit that happened to them. Mm-hmm. So, like, I think that's super intact, but I increasingly am skeptical that this is what the audience wants. You know, the audience wants the wilderness to be real. The audience are all a bunch of fucking Lotties, it seems to me. They want the wilderness to be real. They want it to be hungry. They want some kind of psychic evil force stalking these kids and these adults. And I just don't know what they were going to get it. And I don't know if the most plausible plot forward seems to be just the women completely unraveling and maybe only one or two make it out intact, although they're all complicit. And again, I just don't know if that is going to be something that's super satisfying. And I don't see any other not, you know, plausible way forward, because as you pointed out, there's just so much that the police have to go off of.
Yeah, and you have to believe, if you want to say, well, this can't all be fixed, then you have to believe that Walter is some kind of super hacker, and he's completely untraceable, able to plant evidence wherever, whenever, against police. I mean, it's
small town police.
Yeah, I suppose so, but
I mean, this isn't in Manhattan, nonetheless. This is in Wishkatoshki talk or whatever. I don't know what the, but I think
I don't see it. I don't see the way to make the Kevin connection unless he has access to like Misty's nanny cam where he and Nat were sleeping together, and there's some kind of like conspiracy there they could pin on Nat now that she's dead. But that, I don't know, man, that seems,
is there
like
a real
big
life
stretch.
So like, you know, we watched god, what was that movie called, or that show called, the Taken Back or Corners, it was the last
We Own the City.
We Own the City, thank you. So We Own the City introduced this plot line late, and this is all based on a true story, late in the season, where one detective maybe commits suicide to shield himself from a corruption scandal investigation, maybe gets shot by nebulous bad guys. And I think the show definitely puts its thumb a little bit on one side, but in real life, you know, there's a certain way the official narrative goes, and it's this guy committed suicide, try to make it look like he died in the line of duty to shield his family from a whole line of shit.
Well, but he's shot multiple times with Matt's gun, so good luck with suicide.
Well, I'm just trying. What I'm saying is, like, in real life, there are still a whole bunch of people that are carrying the candle for the fact that this is not just what he wasn't just slain in the line of duty, but actually this is a police cover up. That this detective was the only righteous one on the force, and like people are still to this day, like I think almost going on 10 years later, spun up about it. And that was in Baltimore versus some small town. Like I just don't want to count them out to say that they cannot tell a story of like, you know, this town's institutions being fucked up to the point where a guy like Walter could get in there. Because like I would, the one thing I was shocked that everyone's like, oh, we're supposed to believe that Walter is a criminal hacker mastermind. I'm like, yeah, I do feel like they did tell that part of the story all right. Like he's able to mm-hmm. hack into financial records, bank records, closed circuit TV thing, like with impunity, and he calls himself Moriarty, like, and he's rich, he's super fucking wealthy. Like, I do think we're supposed to understand that he is a very talented and sophisticated hacker, someone who could buffalo a small town police department. So like, that's not super hard for me to believe. It's just all the other stuff. It's just like there's so like something bad happened here, and there's no way there's three completely mm-hmm. unrelated like homicide slash mental breaks going on here that even a small town police department is going to be like, what the? And it looked like there was a sheriff's department there too, because this isn't, you know, you didn't cross a state line, but you definitely crossed county lines. And I don't know, it's a cult that's going to get more scrutiny.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. It all adds up to something that's kind of hard to believe. And that's the thing. Like when you look at a show like Breaking Bad and you want to make comparisons, never did I feel like the character motivations were in question. They always had a solid, just like a rock solid foundation for the characters making the choices they made. In this show, I feel like their slip back into the hunt was way too fast, and it didn't make sense for a lot of the characters there to be going along with this.
Okay, so I continue to echo everything I said last podcast, that this feels like a weird pacing issue, that this is a weird 9-episode season. Have you seen the conspiracy theory that there is a bonus episode yet to come?
Okay, that's interesting.
So before the season aired, there was some behind the scenes kind of footage and press reporting that Jason Ritter, which is the real life husband of, I think, Shauna, Melanie Linsky, and that he was going to be doing, he had filmed scenes that he was acting in Yellow Jackets. Like they had like, you know, still shots from the set of him being in. And the rumor was that he was going to be playing the man in the cabin, you know, the spirit that Jackie saw, quote unquote. Well, we watched all of season two now and he didn't show up. And we got this weird 9-episode. There's people thinking that there's going to be a bonus episode that's entirely in the previous, prior to the Yellow Jackets timeline of whoever was in this cabin, whoever built this cabin, whoever last stayed in this cabin. Do you think there's something to that, or is this massive cope by a grieving television audience that doesn't want to accept that the showrunners got cold feet, that they're given too many answers, and they cut an entire plot line and might maybe hobbled an entire season just because they were weirdly rushing this thing to market? What do you think about?
Yeah, I think that's absolutely wishful thinking. I don't think that's how TV gets made.
Part is wishful thinking, that there's a whole bonus episode, or that mm-hmm. they cut an entire plot line that might have
no
made
there's
some
a whole
of
bonus
stuff.
Episode I, there's okay. no way they're going to air another episode after they've already ended the season. That's so I look back at some of the plot lines and how messy they are, and I say, well, they had the chance to fix that by leaving the scenes in. Like the one that really strikes me is what we talked about with the ritual kind of developing out of nowhere, everybody seems to know the queens are the thing, and like,
yeah,
we don't get to see that scene. They filmed that scene, they never showed it. Are they planning on like going back and jumping through little things like that with this final episode? Did they hold that back, and what purpose would that serve? The secret episode thing I think is a non-starter for me.
Although it would say, I will say that I have been saying for a long, long time that I wish that there was Christmas episodes of my favorite television shows, and I could almost see some fucked up Christmas episode taking place in the winter, the first winter of the Yellow Jackets, or a Christmas episode about the ghosts of Christmas Past. Having said that, like, do you buy this as a theory that this was kind of a messy fucking show and they cut enough out of enough episodes, including Jason Ritter's cabin boy cameo and the women debating how they're going to do the ceremony and all that stuff, that essentially an entire episode got cut out and they had to recut a whole bunch of stuff to
make it fit? That sounds way more like the way TV is made.
Well, it is unusual to cut enough that you actually were supposed to do 10 episodes and ended up with 9.
Sure, but cutting things out that aren't working for whatever reason is 100% the way TV is made. Keeping an episode secret is not the way TV is done. But they could be changing the game. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't buy that there's a very special Christmas episode or a midsummer episode or anything like that. I do think that they did this feel, especially the back half of this season, felt like there was entire things missing. And we now know that were entire things missing that were filmed and were storyboarded and written and, like I said, filmed and all that. And didn't make it in. And I think that the show feels a little half-baked as a result of that. Just everything happened a little bit quicker, and the stuff that worked was cut is bizarre to me because it feels like exactly the kind of things we're saying felt like it was missing. So like, I wonder, did they cut it just because they're like, whoa, 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 we're giving way too many answers way too quick and we don't want to handcuff ourselves that much? Or was it just like, because it's hard for me to believe that putting that stuff intact would make it a worse product, because that's the other possibility. It's like, this is stupid. Like, we came up with the answers, but the answers are dumb. So we want to erase them and come up. We'll give ourselves another year to get the girls out of jail, to get the girls doing some kind of crazy occult stuff that makes sense, to see what the penalty for refusing to draw is. We'll just rethink all this stuff. We'll have a whole other year. Hell, we got a writer strike shut down so we can even go in our corners and spitball more ideas. That feels like what's happened. It just is a shitty answer to people hoping that season two is going to be more the same as season one. Because you're right. At this point, like, I feel this is one of our first test cases of us reevaluating Pulp and Prestige to be more of like the seriousness of the matter rather than like the form of it. Like, okay, if you have robots in space and zombie, but it's taken deadly serious, like The Last of Us, that can be Prestige. Has one of the first test cases of that. I feel like this was a big L, because this show really swung wildly into Pulp territory.
Yeah, I'm with you. We need to get into the recap. We've got
I guess so.
A lot to talk about here.
The wilderness is the space between the ads. We'll be right back.
You haven't heard about the McCrispy yet? Well then, you probably haven't heard the sweet silence after the first crispy bite either. Go try it for yourself to hear the best not sound you've ever heard.
Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
We've got lots of ongoing coverage this week, from book versus show comparisons for Hot D to the latest very special episode of Why Is Mr. Feeny a Car? But there are a couple of main events this week you need to know about.
Firstly, we've got a brand new commission podcast out this Tuesday covering The Raid 2, sometimes subtitled Retaliation. If you're a fan of martial arts films, this is one you don't want to miss. Iko Uwais is a rising star in the action movie world, and it's easy to see why. Join us on Tuesday as we dive into the bigger, badder sequel to The Raid, try and figure out which is better.
Then on Thursday, we're covering the season finale of Hulu's excellent period drama, Shogun. We've been waiting all season to see what Toranaga Sama's plan is, or if he even has one. It all comes down to this, and we couldn't be more excited.
Join us on Thursday for what's sure to be an epic Shogun season finale podcast, and to find out if we plan to cover any related materials.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
Don't freeze to death. Come back to our coverage of Yellow Jackets.
Let's start in 1996. The group brings Javi's body back to the cabin, and Travis is devastated.
I'd like to state for the record that Javi was froze, giving bombastic side eye to everyone. Did you notice that?
Oh, I didn't. No.
the look at his face was like, really?
Yeah, if I freeze to death, I'll probably make a silly face. So it sticks that way.
That's what I hope my last dying thoughts, if I'm freezing in the wilderness, is I want to go with the most grotesque. I want to try to outdo Jack Nicholson in The Shining.
Mm-hmm.
I want rivulets of snot and tears coming out of my eye, but I also paradoxically want to have a goofy expression. All good notes.
Yeah. None of us have a hope of outdoing Jack Nicholson in that department, but we could try. We can wish.
We can try. It's a bonkers scene, like Travis turning around and seeing Nat and being excited, and then his brother strung up like a, you know, like a Han Solo on Endor. Mm-hmm. I always think it's fucked up when you see people strung up like Game, you know?
Oh yeah, and this was in the preview. It's amazing that they waited till the very end of the season to get to this. And they did a great job of hiding who it was, right? They show basically the bottom of a shoe that preview shot. Mm-hmm. And it's the same shot here. And now that we know it's Javi, it's like, oh, of course. Of course. But yeah, pretty fucked up. And that's the thing I like about this episode, I guess, is how fucked up it kind of gets. And this is the beginning of it.
Yeah. Yeah, you mentioned like how fast people moved and changed sides. What did you think of Natalie? You know, she's the one that explains what happened. It wasn't like Misty running forward and saying a bunch of mess. It was her being like, it happened so fast, which made me think that she was going to go with the mud, but then she goes with the wilderness chose.
Yeah, kind of weird for Nat, I think. There was nothing particularly wildernessy about the way that Travis or the way that Javi died, in my opinion. Like, he fell through some ice, he froze to death because you didn't save him. That's not very wildernessy. That's more Nat made a rational choice given the circumstances to save her own life.
I feel like team rationality has gotten a real shot in the arm the last two episodes, because it does seem like the simplest explanation is becoming that these girls are using the wilderness to excuse the things that they're trying to do to survive. We saw like Nat just did it in real time. Nat didn't believe the fucking wilderness chose shit. She definitely felt a personal responsibility for allowing this crazy thing to happen, and now she's coming back and being like, oh, it's the wilderness that did it, because she
can't own up to the fact that she let Javi die.
And she knows Travis will buy it because he's down deep with the sickness.
Mm-hmm. So is she by the end of the episode, which it's one of the things that's hard to understand, but we'll get there.
Yeah. I have some ideas about it, though.
Okay. Let's go to the current day, where Shauna decides to play along with Lottie's insanity to buy them some time by suggesting that they give the wilderness a hunt, because that's what it wants. And Lottie clears the woods of her followers. There are also, like, once Lottie leaves, they talk about having her committed, and Nat thinks that's the whole thing is a bad idea. I agree.
Yeah. When the scene started, I'm like, oh my God, the show is just like going to jump the shark, because like everybody's going to be like, yeah, hunt. Oh God, it's been 25 years. Oh, that'll be so much fun. And then like, as soon as they get Lottie out of the room, it's revealed that like, this was all just a ploy to buy time and discuss. And like, okay, this made a lot of sense. It's tracking, you know?
And everyone's like, what the fuck, Shauna? You know, they're pretty violently opposed to this, which does not jive with what I see later in the episode.
So I watched this episode three times. because I and because I want to give particular interest after I saw the first one. It's like, okay, what? Because this all hinges on Van. Van is the fulcrum mm-hmm. where the women go from like, let's humor Lottie and get a psych team down here to take her down and take her back to Switzerland, to like, actually, you know what, Hunt, not the worst idea we've heard. There is nothing in Van's look or mien during these scenes that suggests that she's actually thinking this is a, because she is like, what the fuck with everyone else? Mm-hmm. And like,
completely,
it doesn't really change until she puts Ty up to the phone call. And I guess, is that fair? Because like, Van was one of the earliest converts. Like, I thought this at the end of last mm-hmm. season that like, okay, I see Miss. So one of the last scenes we saw last season was Lottie at the altar offering worship, and her two acolytes, Misty and Van, were there. Misty made a lot of sense, but Van is like, what the fuck? She came out of nowhere. But she has always been like one of the earliest committed lieutenants of Lottie. Do you think that she is desperate enough to find a cure now that she might have tasted a little bit of happiness with Ty, that she would just give in? She would just instantly start believing in the wilderness again?
No, I mean, I think they really slow played and then fast played this stuff a little too much. They really had me thinking that Van was kind of over this shit. The only thing that makes me think that Van might have been on board with this hunt as an adult is the way she looks at Lottie when she first arrives at this compound. She's like, if you remember, oh, she walks God. Up and she,
you're right.
Like, her mouth agapes, shocked.
But also like some enrapturement too.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Having some spiritual experience there. But then they play it the rest of the time. Like, she couldn't give a shit about any of this. Like, she's here. Like, the only reason she sat down, actually, I don't even know why she sat down here. She saw Lottie and something happened. But then every moment from then on, she's just like, whatever. Why am I here?
She treated the chores as a joke. She was the first one to kind of like suggest kind of like, oh, it's just to booze and drink and slosh it up. But like, I don't know. Cause there's also the Van wanting to believe that she lived for a reason. And the fact that she got this cancer, mm-hmm. Was a kick in the teeth. Like the ultimate of like, why the fuck did we go through all this? Something's got to make sense. And turning to her weird religion might explain all that.
Well, they're using the 1996 timeline as too much of a crutch here, I think. They need to be explaining to me in both timelines why she's having this conversion. And I don't think not wanting to commit Lottie is enough of a reason to want to hunt Shauna.
Can I say that I felt like there was a conversation between Ty and Van that was missing in this episode?
Yeah, Ty has a conversion that I don't buy either. Like, that's what I mean. Everybody
well,
here
Ty's
is making
always got
choices
dark
I don't
Ty
buy.
To lean that you can be like, oh, she's,
oh,
you know,
dark Ty
slipping
took over,
in.
Sure.
Exactly. Whereas Van's always seemed to be, you know, like maybe she leans on the religion and all that, but she's never been one to be like in this episode. She's like, you want me to feel guilty for what? For being alive? I don't feel guilty for being alive. Mm-hmm. I don't wish I was dead and the other person was alive. I'm happy that I'm alive. I just wish that they, you're right. I think they are using the 1996 plot line as a bit of a crutch to that you're supposed to assume. But like, I don't know that that's, now that I say it, does that seem unfair from a creator's perspective to be like, well, hey, we're telling you something about these girls in 96 that you're supposed to apply to the women in 2019 or whatever, 2020.
Well, but then you look at Van the rest of the time as an adult and I don't see that girl, right? I don't see that teenager. I see a completely different woman.
Right.
So now you have to get me there as an adult too. And you can use the things we know about her as a teenager to do it, but you also have to do it. You can't just say she was a teen like this, so maybe she might be that still.
What if the showrunners came back and said, well, we're telling you about these metaphors of the mask. You're supposed to understand that Van has wore the civilized mask for 25 years. And now between the cancer and the crazy coincidence of all of these women being together and just in this, and, you know, that she's redonning her wilderness mask or taking off her civilization mask.
That's fine. Tell me that story. I don't think they did. They told me a story of someone who was concerned for their friend and didn't want to commit them. Like, they didn't tell me the story of somebody who was excited to get back into the hunt.
Yeah, like I agree. Like there's some people that you see a scene like if there's a person who gives a person a rifle and it's like, here's a gun, defend this thing with the gun. You're like, okay, it's got a rifle, all that stuff. What if you saw the person conspicuously handing the character the pieces to a rifle? It's like been field stripped. It's all the springs and firing pins are all just, it's just in a, just like, here, take this gun and defend it. And the next scene you saw them shooting it. Now you could get there and be like, well, maybe that person was in the military and they knew how to field strip a rifle and they were able to put it back together and all that kind of like, but like, do I give the creator credit for just showing the pieces and then the final thing? Or do I actually want to see like the person being like, oh, this reminds me of being in boot camp and they put the simple, I don't know. I don't like, cause like I'm a big proponent of like showing, not telling, and don't hold the viewer's hand. But like, it does feel like a bit of creative malpractice to leave that many dots for people to connect.
Yeah, that's how I felt about it for sure.
All right. I'm just trying to get, cause I'm trying to give the arguments I'm seeing for people that are like, Because like a lot of times what I'm getting is like, well, you don't appreciate patient storytelling and you don't know how to you don't know how to interpret media and your media literacy is low. And I'm like, I flatter myself to think that that's not true in my case. Like, I don't get everything, sure, but I'm pretty game to get stuff. And I feel like this is, I don't know, it's definitely off the sweet spot of handholding versus fuck you, find your own map, you know?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of stuff in this finale that's disjointed and it's a problem.
Also, that's the other thing is this doesn't feel like a creative technique. It feels like just stuff that's missing and slapdash. So,
yeah. And that's speaking of the person who's maybe the most likely to go along with this. Now, I will say we don't know a ton about what transpires between Nat being made queen of the Yellow Jackets and them being rescued. Mm-hmm. So maybe the Nat stuff will make a lot more sense in retrospect. But
well,
Nat is gung-ho about this, too, and I don't get that at all.
The one thing that I keep in mind is multiple Yellow Jackets have attributed their survival to Nat. Like, we wouldn't have got through that second winter without Nat. Oh, without Nat's leadership, we wouldn't. That's one of the reasons that they're so generous. Like, Misty follows Nat especially and, like, looks after her. The reason Ty paid for her rehab. Like, they feel uniquely indebted to Nat. And now that we see she's become the Antler Queen, quote-unquote, whatever, like, that makes a lot of more sense. But clearly there is some things that she's going to do that get her a fair amount of appreciation on into these women's adulthood. So I am curious to see like what Nat looks like as the leader, because she's an unlikely choice.
Yeah, me too.
I'm kind of with Shauna.
The most unlikely.
I didn't think Shauna was the likely choice either, but we'll talk about that, I guess, when we get there.
All right, let's go back to 1996, where Misty tells Lottie that they did some crazy ritual and the wilderness chose Javi. Lottie says she never wanted this to happen. Misty tells her, look, you started this and get with the program. And then she goes downstairs and tells the others that Lottie is pleased.
Here again, I feel like us Team Rational's eaten well, because this is a clear case of like the person who listens to the wilderness most saying this is fucked up and someone else just rewriting reality. Misty being like, well, this is the way it is now, because why? Who the fuck appointed Misty to be head of anything? Like, is she the shadow Antler Queen?
Nobody appointed her, certainly. They've all asked her to kind of be there when they can't handle things, and I think she's done a great job with that. Leaving aside all the horrible things she's done. This is probably the most rational and reasonable thing to do in this situation is, look, you've talked these people into making this horrible decision to save their lives. Don't go making them feel bad about it. That's right on. That's absolutely right on. Lottie can't come downstairs and be like, you're all heretics. You did a horrible thing. You shouldn't have killed Javi. Oh, my God, what are you eating? She can't do that because, you know, she brought them to this place.
Did Lottie intentionally pick Nat because she knows Nat is the one that doesn't believe it? And she was hoping that that would, you know, edge things, because if she makes Misty the leader, that's clearly the worst choice one could make. She sees a dark totally. That Ty has the dark, like she's doing sleepwalking crazy shit. Van went along with this way, like she's like by process of elimination. Shauna almost killed me last episode. It can't be her. By process, they just end up with Nat. Because
I did wonder if she was trying to put the brakes on this by selecting Nat.
That's what it feels like, right? But unfortunately, in exact the same way that we thought it would work with Shauna, where it's like, well, she will like Lottie subconsciously knows the right way to manipulate people or the right leverage. Giving all of this responsibility and a power to Natalie is the thing that will co-opt her.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I at this point, I think Lottie's trying to pump the brakes, but like it's too far gone. The brakes are gone. No one can operate them, and somehow it's going to suck Nat in too.
Yeah, I can't tell how much of it is Lottie actively like trying to pump the brakes, and how much is her genuinely not feeling the connection to the wilderness anymore. Like she doesn't understand what's going on. If she's like thinking, I didn't mean for any of this to happen, she might just have lost her connection to it, either temporarily or whatever. But
well, a lot of mental illness kind of comes and goes in waves. It's not like you are, you know, at an 11 all the time. You kind of like wax and wane with like your body chemistry and natural cycles, especially like things like bipolar and whatnot. I wonder if this is just like Lottie coming out of one of these deliriums, religious fervors, schizophrenic breaks, whatever it is, and she's like thinking better of it, you know?
Yeah, could be.
But like tomorrow she might be full on, you know, Antler Queen again.
Yeah, she might also be just trying to absolve herself of the guilt and responsibility of
like
getting more of them killed, eating more of them.
Yeah, yeah. When she says, I thought it would wanted what's best, that could be her obliquely referring to herself in the third person. Like, I was just wanting the best, and like, oh my God, look, I was... Yeah. And I guess...
she had no part in developing these rituals, right? It was all the other girls, so...
Right, and she was horrified by it, and then Misty comes, and, you know, as the mouth of God says the opposite, she's pleased, and she's glad the wilderness chose this, and all that. It's...
I was really hoping that they'd keep Lottie bedridden for a while longer, because I love that idea that Misty would be the mouthpiece, Rita for the Rajneeshi cult
Are you talking about the Batshit Valley documentary now? That's exactly what I thought too.
Yeah, she could totally be the Rita. I would have loved that, but they kind of just like play that card and then move on, and that could have been fun for an episode or two.
Again, pacing.
Yeah. So Shauna gets to the gruesome work of chopping up Javi. She has to cover her eyes to do it. We get a lot more bad fake snow. My God, it's so bad. This is interesting. Shauna has to cover her eyes in order to cut up Javi. I don't know how that really helps, because she's like feeling him up, looking for the jugular.
Yeah, if you told Javi before this trip, hey, dude, you're gonna get the second base with the girl, he'd be happy until he found out that, here's the thing, you're gonna be a corpse and the woman's gonna be touching your breasts.
Yeah, and about to cut you open.
Yeah, and about to gut you like a fucking Christmas goose. Yeah, yeah.
This table is not meant to accommodate Javi. I don't know. He's grown so much apparently in the off season that the table won't fit. This must be why they call it long pork, right? Because it won't fit on the butchering table.
Right. The way the legs, they don't tuck up underneath like you want them to. I will praise the show's sound design again, because man, the choral vocals they use in these scenes where the wilderness is like influencing, or you know, like Sean is channeling the force to efficiently butcher this kid, is just, it's really unsettling. Like, this is gruesome. crazy visuals, and the audio team definitely matched it. Like, they go, like, the Foley people are going for broke, the orchestra, the musicians are going for broke. It's really effective.
Mm-hmm. Nat gives Javi a little modesty too, throws a towel over his crotch.
I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, it makes sense.
It shows, but, like, there's, like, some vestige of, like, propriety that they're, you know, like, Nat's trying to maintain.
Mm-hmm.
Which will be interesting with her being the leader. That's...
Especially when they use it in a soup later, too. Like, yeah. You're really that worried about modesty when you're, I don't know, cooking soup. It up in a pot. Yeah.
Yeah, I keep coming back to thinking that Nat is potentially the leader during the craziest of the Antler Queen shit. My brain kind of blue screens because it's hard. Mm-hmm. It's hard for me to swallow that the most rational of them. But I keep remembering they're all 17 or 18. I'm thinking if they're 17 or 18 of, like, me and my friend group out in the woods, like, probably none of us believe in ghosts at the beginning. But, like, if we're stuck there, like, I don't know. Maybe, like kids are really susceptible, and they're only a couple years removed from the completely magical thinking of youth. It might be easy to get them back on. I'm trying to give the show as much benefit of the doubt as I can, but it's really hard for me. Just like I'm like Coach Ben, like, oh God, not you too, Natalie.
Yeah, and I'm mostly with it there. I think the Nat stuff could get interesting, and I could see it certainly. They're all starving, right? That's always a part of it. So yeah, I guess we'll just see where they go with it, but it's okay so far. Let's go back to the current day. Misty sneaks into Lottie's office and finds her meds. Well, Lottie's meds and her phone. Walter sneaks in and finds her there, and he says, "I'm here to help."
And this scene mostly it sets Walter's arrival, mm-hmm. but it also sets how Lisa gets the gun, because she forces this lock open. It's just broken, which Lottie will note with amusement later on. And... yeah, Lisa ends up with it.
Yeah, and I'm super excited when Walter shows up, because Walter is maybe the best part of this entire episode for me.
He might be threatening to be the best part of the season.
He could, yeah. Especially him and Misty together. That's always great.
It's been a lot of fun.
Van and Ty make masks for the hunt. Van tries to convince Ty that Lottie isn't sick and that they can help her rather than have her committed. I think there's a pretty strong argument from Van that works almost exclusively on Ty.
I was about to say.
Yeah, would it help for you to be locked up, you know?
Yeah.
Of course, Ty has to say, no, I don't want to be locked up. Well, that's exactly how Lottie feels, I'm sure.
That's the interesting thing about Ty, is she plays, her adult Ty plays like, God damn, can you believe how crazy Lottie is when mm-hmm. she is the sleepwalking, demon-possessed, animal-sacrificing, I think it's very effective for Van to turn that back around on her.
Like, well, and I'm with Van here.
If Lottie,
like,
needs help, then you do too. And what do you need? Yeah. Do you need to be locked up in a fucking institution?
But is that what help looks like for you?
There's still no evidence that Van is down with the woo-woo.
No.
And even this scene, because I'm scrutinizing everyone. It's like, when do you change? When do you change? When does this all come around?
And I get wanting to help your friend by some other means than locking them up. That's cool. I have no problem with Van not wanting to lock up Lottie.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, because, like, you know, we all are aware of what happens on, you know, psych emergency calls, and it just seems like it's a bad deal. And if is it all a way you could avoid throwing your friend through into the system and perhaps having police show up and shoot them, you'd want to do that, right? But, yeah.
Especially with what they've shown us of Lottie's time in there, you know, the glimpses we've gotten have been pretty bad.
Yeah, and these women all do have a bond, and they do care for each other. Even you know, to some extent, Misty, you know, is the most odd one out, but they all value it. They do call her when they need her, you know.
Yeah, totally. The other Yellow Jackets are preparing the deck of cards, and Shauna is dulling the knives, which I don't know how that helps you. Like, it's weird. Shauna is preparing for... I don't know. I guess Shauna is trying to protect Lottie in this scene, but I don't know how... I guess this just buys you more time, right? Like, you can go further into the ritual without actually completing it.
Yeah, that's what I got, is that there's a really nebulous about, like, how long is it going to take until these people show up, and, you know, if they do show up and it becomes clear to Lottie that they're going to take her, is she going to try to grab a knife and do something crazy? Like, let's just blunt every knife and try to get... And it hilariously kind of backfires, because Lottie, of course, brings her own fucking Rambo knife to the proceeding that I'm pretty sure is not blunted. But it feels like, you know, like, Shauna seems like she's a planner. And this feels like a plan that she would do, yeah.
Yeah, the thing is, they could have an infinite amount of time if they just said, we're not doing this.
Well,
you know,
but
like,
then
Shauna comes up
with
this improvised plan to not even make Lottie feel like she's crazy, I guess.
I think it's because they're worried that Lottie will hurt herself. Because, like, Lottie was this close. Like, I think it's important to remember the reason that Shauna blurted out, let's just give her the hunt, is, like, that Lottie had picked up a glass and was about to swig it.
But there were four of them and one Lottie. I would think they could just call the authorities and sit with her until they got there.
Right.
They
don't have
to pretend to be doing a ritual, right? Like, that's the other thing.
I guess it's like you got Lottie in a full-blown psychotic break. Would you rather channel her energy into something that you feel like you can control and it's her idea and she's going to be happy to do it? Or do you want to, like, cause a whole bunch of static and have her act out or get violent and have to hurt her, or maybe she hurts herself or others? Like, I feel like, look, it's insane, but it's, like, one of the more defensible things to kind of, like, go with the flow, especially given these women's backgrounds, you know?
I don't know. Maybe. If you really just, like, don't want to hurt your friend's feelings until the authorities show up and take her away.
No, I'm not talking about her feelings, dude. I'm talking about her body. Like, if she goes batshit and starts, like, swinging and yelling and screaming or trying to get... She has access to drugs maybe they don't know about. Like, I think they're worried about her hurting herself.
But then they totally abandon her. Like, Nat and Shauna are over here doing their own thing, prepping. She could be out there doing God knows what.
Well, but why would she? Because she's doing what she's all her friends are busy getting ready for the hunt and the ritual, which is what she really desperately. I don't, like I said, yeah,
it's iffy. I think it's iffy, but,
like,
you know,
it might have been better if all
four
of them gang rushed her, wrapped her up in a blanket and stuck her in a closet until the psych team. But then also, like, what do you do with the cult? Like, does the purple people rise against you if you start doing that?
Okay, yeah.
Because that's the other thing.
They attack you with jars of honey and, I don't know, clover.
That's when she executes Order 66, the kill code. She's she's carefully conditioned them over the last 5 years to,
yeah,
I don't know, release the bees and go in anaphylactic shock. I don't know. But I feel like it's one of the more defensible crazy shit to happen in this episode.
All right. Jeff and Callie are in the car driving to the compound. They talk about I don't know. I get the feeling that Callie has suggested that they go on the run, and Jeff is saying why that's a bad idea, running it down. He inadvertently tells Callie about the gun in the glove box, and they pull up to the gate and are confronted by the purple people. They decide, let's find another way in, and they drive off as Kevin and Matt arrive, having followed them there.
I really enjoyed how quickly Callie figured out exactly where the gun was in his disposition, because, like, Jeff is just a fucking idiot that goes with the first thing he thinks of at all times.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and you're going there. I kind of think you would maybe want to bring a gun with you, but you also want to keep it hidden. Yeah. It's a pretty obvious place, though.
Why the fuck does Jeff Google himself? He works for, like, an Ashley's Furniture in a small town in New Jersey. What is he expecting here?
I assume it's vanity. I mean, what?
Right.
I don't know.
Like, I understand why, like, celebrities Google themselves or politicians Google themselves. But if you're just, like, a washed up second string quarterback from high school that sells used furniture, why the fuck would you think that anyone is talking about you?
He's probably got like a lot of nudes out there that he's just making sure have not gone wide yet.
Okay. Jeff's got a lot of nudes. Strawberry yeah. Lube is just slinging his schlong everywhere.
Yeah, well, maybe he didn't take them, you know?
Oh, God.
Maybe they the covert nudes. I don't know.
Maybe every few months, Shauna hunts him in the pale moonlight.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
She really likes stressing him up like a deer and taking pictures of him naked. He doesn't
I mean,
get
you don't
it,
stay
but, you
in
know.
That kind of shape if you're not taking nudes. Come on. Right?
I guess. I'm just thinking, like, I just think these sad Google search sessions were like, you know, Jeff, like, he spent weeks putting off the curiosity, fighting off the hunger, and then he goes and zero results, you know?
Oh, no, he's hoping the nudes will get out there. He's looking for his big break. Yeah. He's too much of a chicken to go make the break happen himself.
I think Jeff's just in disbelief he survived to the end of this season. I really, you know...
Mm-hmm.
This man, when they were slicing that cucumber, I'm like, you're done, Jeff. And here, look at you, made it to the presumed third season.
Nat tells Lisa to leave the compound tonight and thanks her for everything she's done for her. Forgiveness, it's a nice idea.
This is not how you get a person to leave.
Nope.
You come in raving about, you've got to get out of here. I can't tell you what, but something's coming.
Mm-hmm.
And it's unforgivable because I also want to talk weirdly about forgiveness and how it's a failed lesson and I couldn't learn it. And it's like, come on. Oh, God.
What is Nat getting at here exactly? I'm not sure. Has she decided at this point she's going to go through with this ritual? And if so, why?
Yeah, why is she giving Lisa an extra special warning to, like, get out because something is bad? Like, you're right. This implies that Nat has kind of already decided to make it real and things are going to get fucked up.
Maybe, or it might imply that...
But
if Lottie is hauled away tonight, the cult is going to crumble and she wants to give her a way forward, right? Like, you don't need these people. It's one thing to be... To decide you don't need the cult. It's another thing for the cult to crumble out from underneath you and leave you in the lurch.
Is there any way to say that better? Like, I feel like that's better off just having a regular conversation, being like, you know, I haven't known you very long, but you strike me as a really strong, capable woman. And, you know, you probably doesn't feel that way because your mom and dad browbeat you your whole life. But, you know, you're just like, rather than go up and, you know, like you just seen a ghost and talking all this mess, because this is designed to make a person freak out and overreact.
Yeah. In Nat's mind, she thinks she's setting Lisa free here, but what she's really doing is, yeah, causing her to be very curious and suspicious.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't know what's going through Nat's head here, honestly. But I will say that Julia Lewis is nailing the young Nat vibe in this scene. Like the way she says, it's a nice idea. It like I'm feel like I'm seeing the teenage version of her on screen.
Agreed.
Then we go back to 96 where Coach arrives back at the cabin. He's excited about the fresh meat that Shauna is cutting up until he realizes it's Javi. He turns to leave. He runs into teenage Nat. Coach tells Nat that he knows where Javi was hiding and invites her to go hide there with him. But Nat says, I'm a horrible person, but you're not, and you don't belong here.
I think it's funny that we said that Coach is going to return to the cabin like Donald Glover in Community.
Mm-hmm.
And we were exactly right, except for the surprise twist is Donald Glover is the one who set the apartment on fire. I loved how Coach Ben played this. Like, he walks into clearing and like he sees all this meat and he just can't, like, it's a kid on Christmas morning, like, oh my God, you guys found a deer or something, and he's like staggering forward just like, oh, I can eat. And then he sees the stack of little boy clothes and mm-hmm. like, oh fuck, it's a really great performance. And then Haunted Nat comes up And he's like, oh, Jesus Christ, you're the only sane one. Let's go and subsist in our magical steam vent. And turns she's out, like, no, I'm the worst.
Sane here.
I'm the worst one there is, coach. And it's unhinged.
Yeah. Yeah. If he had been a little bit quicker, I guess, about discovering the hideout, they probably could have gotten away together.
Yeah.
But of course, this is not going to go well for him, right? The wilderness, obviously, we'll see later. The wilderness is not going to provide for him the way that it did Javi.
Yeah, I'm working on this new this theory that the cabin guy was the lone survivor of another like crazy kind of dwindling survival thing, and like the coach is going to be the cabin guy for this generation. Except for maybe the girls get but the cabin's burnt down now.
Mm-hmm.
So he can't be the cabin guy. He's the anti-cabin guy.
Oh, he's anti-cabin for sure.
He can't get much more anti-cabin than this.
You can't really.
Burn it down. This cabin is a corrupt system.
Unless he was attacking the concept of cabins directly. Yeah. I don't know how you get more anti-cabin.
Let me ask you this. When do you think he got the idea to burn the cabin down? Because I have a I think the show gives us that information.
Yeah, I think it's when he sees Nat being appointed the new leader.
Yeah, I think he came to that cabin just to steal an axe and some matches. But when he saw Nat, like, you know, being not just, like at the center of this crazy shit, it broke him.
Mm-hmm. So Travis is feeling pretty awful about his brother's death, but Van says, hey man, we're just surviving. We're JSSing out here. She tells Travis to let Javi save him by eating his body.
Yeah, I thought it's interesting. We talked about how the young Nat, old Nat are like mirroring each other. I thought this was a weird reverse that the younger Nat or the younger Van did an uncanny job of channeling Lauren Ambrose when she's like, I don't feel guilty. I'm glad I'm alive. Let your brother save you. Like that seemed like is an eerily similar performance that you're getting from the older Van. So, yeah, and again, like, the Van stuff kind of sort of tracks because I thought she converted out of nowhere last year, too. You know, she miraculously survived the wolves, I guess, and miraculously healed her face. But, you know, I wouldn't have put her on the top two Yellow Jackets to be kneeling at an altar at the end of season one list. She'd have been towards the bottom of that list.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's go to the current day. Maybe my favorite scene of the whole episode. Kevin finds Walter cooking in the kitchen. Walter fawns over the detective a bit and makes him some tea, claiming he's been tracking this coven of criminals. Yeah, man. Elijah Wood is just so good in this scene. He's so good.
And it works like a lot of people are like, why would this detective take a hot cocoa from? And I'm like, I don't think you're aware of just how non-threatened Kevin was by Walter in this situation.
He's completely disarming, right?
Completely disarming. He's offering him hot cocoa. Like, there's nothing like
he's as good at this as Mags Bennett.
Yes. Yeah.
From Justified.
Yeah. Yeah, she's got the hot apple pie, the apple pie. He's got the hot cocoa, but they are very good at slipping the knife in where you don't even feel it. And I think you're an insane person if you don't take Elijah Wood's hot cocoa in this case. Now you'd be a dead person. I'm just saying you're a nutter if you like smack the hot cocoa out of Elijah Wood's hands in this circumstance.
Nice try.
You might be a nutter that survives, but like 999 times out of 1,000, you're going to be an insane person to save yourself that one time.
How much of his fawning over Kevin do you think is real, and how much of it is just him trying to disarm this detective?
So my first thing is like I actually thought he was genuinely fanboying over a real life detective. But subsequent watches, I think there's a little bit of a mocking. I don't think that Elijah Woods respects these cops at all.
because he's already got this plan in motion where he's going to pin all these murders on Kevin, right? He knows that Kevin's going down tonight. Yeah. And he's like, yeah, he's faking this enthusiasm for meeting a real life detective, right?
He sent the cops here. Uh-huh. Like, this
this
just in case you haven't connected the dots, like, this is the message that he posed as a cult person that mm-hmm. bring the cops out here, and there's a bunch of weird stuff, and then the cops show up, and suddenly this really friendly, chatty guy who's talking about, oh yeah, these weird women showed up, it's a whole coven, and like, hey, I got some unorthodox police work that's leading and Kevin just eats it up. He drinks it down, just like the hot cocoa.
Yeah, absolutely. In retrospect, do you think he's been in more communication with the police than that one email he sent that says, I think I might have some information for you? Has he sent information or has he teased information?
I think it's impossible to know, but my gut says no. My gut says that the cops somehow lucked into finding the body. That wasn't Walter. And that I don't think Walter even had a thought of revenging himself against Misty. I don't think he thought it was that deep, or to the extent that he's Moriarty, maybe he, I don't know. He's still a mysterious guy that we don't know much about and has a lot of mysterious motivations, but shit.
Yeah, I wonder if he hasn't sent some information that might link one of the cops, and maybe it's ambiguous enough that either Kevin or Matt could be implicated here. But that would make some sense.
You think he's got he's got a fragment of the truth that looks bad to one of these guys? I wonder if that's true of almost anybody. Like, if you can't find something, if you have unfettered access to the average person's email and texts, could you dive through that to find something that they would be like? Maybe it's all in their head, but they'd be so mortified it would get out that you could lean on them.
Yeah, I mean, unless you're Mr. Rogers, sure, probably.
Right, I would think so.
Everybody's got their secrets.
It's the psychological. It's the deep, dark psychological version of saying a guy's got weird balls. Like, everyone's got some kind of skeleton buried in their closet, and if you just imply that you know it, then they're gonna.
And it might not be murder. It might not even be anything anybody would care about, but it's something that you feel.
Yeah,
you want to keep secret.
Or it might be a limit, like you know, if you're cheating on your husband or wife, it's like your small family cares a lot, but like the world at large doesn't give a shit.
Right.
So it's like, it can be things like that.
Yeah. So I don't know. I really love this scene. And then Callie and Jeff sneak into the compound where they see Kevin and Walter talking through the window. Jeff sends Callie to go find her mom. And then he goes inside where he does a tearful false confession to Kevin that he killed Adam. Fortunately for him, Kevin collapses before he can arrest Jeff from the poison tea. And Walter introduces himself and has Jeff help him move the body.
How much layer of bullshit is Elijah Wood's Walter operating on? When he says, ooh, that's surprisingly fast acting, I don't buy that. I think Walter knew exactly how fast that would act. But I think that he's constantly just putting out a stream of misinformation so that people underestimate him. And he does this including Misty as well.
I will say they need something to differentiate him and Misty. It would be nice if she knew about the chemicals that you could use, the methods for killing people, and he was
she's got
that
literal medical training. Yeah,
right. That would be nice, but yeah, I tend to think he knew it would act fairly quickly, if not exactly this fast. You know, one thing I'm not sure about is whether Kevin would arrest Jeff at all. He seems like he understands this is just a transparent attempt by Jeff to take the blame for his wife's misdeeds.
Yeah, I wondered that too. Like, would the average cop care? Like, or not? It cares not, because I think the average cop would care if they put the wrong person away, and more to like if there's a murder out in the streets. But, like, would the average cop, like, that doesn't know them personally, if the husband comes up and does a tearful confession, like, that might be surprising to them. But it's like, oh, also, this is another standard. There's, like,
they've seen it a dozen times, right?
Yeah, that's what I was trying to get at. Exactly, mm-hmm. exactly. But like the fact that he knows Jeff, I think makes it uniquely kind of like, yeah, I don't buy it.
Yeah, it really came across as like, Jeff, just stop, Jeff. I'm not buying any of this.
But on the other hand, like if Jeff insists and they don't have any other, like I wonder if you would have to kind of be like, well, like I think this is bullshit, but if I, what, on the 10% chance I'm wrong, I let this guy go free and he kills again, and then what, like I don't know. Mm-hmm. But I mean, obviously, who cares, because Kevin's dead.
Maybe the best line in this whole episode is in this scene where he and Jeff and Callie are sneaking up. And they're kind of bickering back and forth about, like, blame and, you know, because Jeff started this whole thing with the blackmail stuff, right?
Right.
And I forget what Callie says, but Jeff's response is to say, the American family is crumbling. Callie, you try making a living in sectionals. I thought that was a hilarious line.
It's really funny. Yeah. Yeah.
And why do you have to keep selling sectionals, man? You're a furniture store, but sell recliners, sell Lazy Boys. I don't know.
Maybe sectionals are the last thing that you got good margins on.
Could be.
Swedish flat pack has come for everybody except for sectionals. I mean, I know they make them, but come on. You can only pack so much sectional into flat pack.
Sure. Sounds reasonable. I don't know. Let's go back to 96 where Coach tries to make a fire in Javi's hidey hole. Not working too well. Shauna serves up Javi on a charcuterie board, with Travis giving his blessing to eat his brother by taking a bite of his raw heart. This is significantly more fucked up than I expected.
Yeah, there's the eating hearts is super gross. So I'll go back to Game of Thrones season one. I didn't like the way the organ jiggled and slid when it hit the cast iron. It's just, it's all bad. And it also has me like one that's like, these girls are just yes-anding this cult. You know, no one is telling mm-hmm. them how to do it. Like, Shauna comes in and she's like, oh, it's your brother's heart. Here's a heart. And he's like, oh, should I throw it in the fire? Should I put it on the altar? Fuck it. Take a bite of the apple. I like, there's no wrong answers. And that's a little disappointing because I'm a big lore procedural guy and I kind of wanted something more than just like that felt right, so we did it. But I guess that's exactly how a nature cult would work.
I can't, sure, I don't know much about nature cults, but what I do know is a little bit about brothers, being one myself. I don't think there's a circumstance under which I would ever take a bite of my brother's raw heart, whether I was starving or not. You just throw it on the fire. That is permission enough for these people to go do what they're going to do.
But he saved you. Let your brother save you, Jim.
Let him save me medium well. Don't let him save me raw. I don't need that in my life, man.
I don't want no raw salvation, dude.
Heart is difficult to eat and not great at the best of times when it's prepared by a professional chef.
Yeah,
that's being your brother
muscle
is
muscle texture and the tubey nature of the ventre. Yeah, it's just not good.
Yeah, it's no good. I feel like they always make hearts a little too easy to bite into as well. I feel like hearts.
Well,
would
we could find out.
Way hard.
Go get a pig heart. We go big pig heart. Bite in that thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No thanks.
10,000 club subscribers, we will eat a pig heart live on
no,
podcast.
Just... maybe if it's served medium well, sure.
Now you could cook it. I'm not saying. Oh wait, I just said raw heart. Yeah. We'll let Jim cook it because he's got a delicate.
I mean, I've eaten heart, just not human.
Oh,
not my brother's
heart.
And not raw.
Yeah. Yeah.
I do love the way that most of the girls look away when he bites this raw heart. Because, yeah, it's fucking disgusting. Except for Misty, who sits there, mouth agape, wrapped.
Dude, all of
with
the
attention
women.
Here.
I don't know if the show will end up rewarding it, but it is interesting to go back and look at all the different women's perspectives. And yeah, especially like in the cabin burning scene. Like, it's... They're really making a meal of it. I thought it's also like this. the way the girls acted, you know, they're waiting for Travis. As soon as he throws the heart, they all like greedily come forward and grab their pieces of meat and throw it in there. Like, you know, they really give this kind of ravenous, you know, like they're just barely waiting on this. What little ceremony they got. They're just barely hanging on. And as soon as they can get it, they want to throw that meat on the fire and get it into their bellies. They're hungry.
I think they all should have taken a raw bite. I mean, Travis set the standard here, right?
Raw bites. Yeah.
I mean, take one raw bite and then throw it on the fire.
So clearly when we see people getting eaten in the future, the heart will be a part of the offering, right?
Gotta be. Yeah.
Yeah. You can't go backwards in terms of pomp and circumstance.
Pass the shrooms. We'll be right back. We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of Apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off Badass Season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints. Except, it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim. Order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar. Then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live. All hail the Antler Queen. We're back with Yellow Jackets. All right, Misty takes some sautéed hobby up to Lottie. She's reluctant to eat, but Misty orders her to eat, and she does. Really?
It's interesting. Really... They're still, like, this is the last time I can remember someone, the last time in a long time someone, like, appealed to the sins of the team. You know, like, I think, like, the last time this happened was, like, Jackie back in season one, but, I thought it was a weird thing for Misty to do.
Yeah. I mean, they're a team of sorts. Current day, Lottie listens to the Wilderness. Ty calls off the crisis team, kind of at Van's behest, that was coming to get Lottie. And the Yellow Jackets gather around the fire to start the ceremony. I really like the song that they use. This is a Leonard Cohen, Buffy St. Marie, God is Alive, Magic is Afoot. There's such a like disjointed, jumbled mess at the beginning of this song that really feels like what might be going through Lottie's head.
Yeah.
And this Magic is Alive stuff. And Magic
all
is Afoot.
The all the nouns and verbs and prepositions get shifted around where God's Afoot and...
Yeah,
Magic is Alive. It's it is. I've never heard this song before.
Oh, I haven't either.
And it's a good choice. They had a lot of good song pulls throughout this, like the opening up the episode of the zombie. They had Sad But True cover by Saint Vincent, Sad But True cover of Metallica. I mean, that's the one thing that hasn't slipped in this show. If you think some of the, you know, the plotting, some of the other stuff has, is like the music choices, the music direction is still top notch.
Yeah. And they use it well too. I think in the scenes where they need it, they pick a perfect vibe for the scene, like that Radiohead, Street Spirit or what, Fade Out. That's one of my favorite Radiohead songs, and it's used really well in this episode.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. It's like, and like Lottie, like, really is kind of coming to her own in the present. You know, she's like fully coming into her antler queen. She's like just like almost in a state of religious ecstasy, mm-hmm. as this song is playing. And like, I thought it's interesting how she notices that her cabinet is forced, and I think she even notices that the gun is gone. Though I didn't put that in my notes, so I'm not sure about that. But she definitely notices that her cabinet's been forced open, and she looks at it, and she kind of laughs and smiles. Like, oh, this is the wilderness. Wilderness playing a Joker card again. I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, it could be because the gun is gone. She might assume one of the women took it for the hunt. I don't know.
It's definitely that it's been forced and a lock no longer works. And there again, it's like, is it the wilderness? The wilderness is us, because this implies a lot. He could have been like, oh, wait a second, what the fuck is happening? But she doesn't, because she just assumes this is just more, you know, wilderness changing the rules on him.
Did you notice Lottie, sorry, not Lottie, Nat, maybe tucking something up her sleeve here? It's like a semi-conspicuous shot of her kind of doing something with her right hand here, and it looked like she was tucking something up her sleeve, but it never comes to anything in this episode. So
shit.
Maybe not. I might be crazy.
I didn't notice that. So I went back and looked at this just now. She's tucking a knife in her sleeve. Presumably a still sharp one.
Probably, yeah.
So does that imply that Nat was showing up here to kill Lottie?
Or whoever drew the queen?
This makes a lot more sense about her, you know, explaining to Lisa she has to get out of there, because she knew something was going to... She was also on the plan no sight call. I don't think she was going to tell Van or Ty about it, but yeah, she was going to do...
God. Yeah, I mean...
Or did she want to go through with the hunt?
Yeah, that's what I assume, which sort of tracks, but maybe, I don't know, maybe they needed the part where she realized they brought the darkness back with them closer to this episode, because she's had a whole episode to just kind of hang out and rethink things.
Well, it also recontextualized, now that we know that she was made the leader, of course, I don't know, like, you know, there's also the idea that in the spring, the queens do battle for supremacy, and they've already set up some jealousy and some rivalries on that, too. But, like, knowing that Natalie is the leader and that several post-Yellow Jackets this season last have credit her uniquely as with their survival, I mean, maybe she felt an obligation to finish what was started in some way, you know.
Are we ever going to see one of these rituals that results in the person who drew the queen dying?
Dude, I don't know.
So far, we're 0-2 with that.
And we're running out of test cases. There's only 3 plausible people that can be killed, and that's one of the unfortunate things about the show is literally no one cares about them.
Yeah, I mean, in the teenage timeline, they have a lot more queens they could pull, but, like, I don't know, is this part of the joke is going to be that, like, the wilderness never picks the person who drew the queen? And in that case, why the hell do they keep doing it?
Right? It's like one of those things, like, I've often told people, it's like, if you've got 2 different options and you're just on the horns of a dilemma, flip a coin. Mm-hmm. And then if you'll know the second you see the result, you'll either feel like, oh, good, or you'll feel a little disappointed. And that'll tell you like what you secretly wanted the whole time. That's the wilderness. They do the card thing to be like, OK, fine, eat Mari. I'm not feeling a Mari.
The pink hat girl's over there. She's looking pretty tasty, though.
Exactly. Yeah. I think it's one of that. It's the wilderness just trying to, like, you know, just see how we feel.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So Callie's looking for her mom when Matt finds her, and she considers shooting him, but he gets a fake phone call from Kevin, which is actually from Walter. Walter and Jeff toss Kevin's phone in the trunk of the cop car and run off. When did he record this? When did Kevin say, "What the fuck you doing?"
This is the thing that Walter recorded while he was, because that's what Kevin said to Jeff when he started confessing.
Okay.
These are all things that recorded from the butler's pantry or whatever in the kitchen.
Wherever he was. Yeah, he was tucked into the dumb waiter.
Yeah. There's so many ways. There's some places you can stash in Elijah Woods. He's a little guy.
Yep.
He's like an elf on the shelf. You can just be anywhere.
And then
why do they have Matt bump into Cali? Is it just established he has the gun? Because nothing comes of it.
Yeah, I guess it does do that. It establishes she has a gun.
Yeah, and it lets Elijah be clever by luring him there, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it worked. Then the Yellow Jackets pull cards until Shauna finally draws the queen. The rest don masks and weapons and chase her. Alright, this is all a little wild. Let me ask you this. So what happens if you refuse to draw?
I presume the hunt automatically begins on you. That's the only thing that makes sense.
Like, it's worse than that. Like, maybe we don't kill and eat you. Maybe we do something
that is pretty worse.
More
like,
terrible.
you go from an odds of being hunted to a sure thing of being hunted.
Right.
I guess unless the rational thing to do
is pull a card. But
unless you're being altruistic and you want to volunteer as tribute.
Sure. I don't know if that's a thing.
Yeah, it seems like something they'd play with a full season, full three seasons ahead of us if they get what they want. I don't know, but it's like one of those things where it's like, I felt like last season they answered a lot of questions and then opened up a lot more of intriguing possibilities. This season feels like this is emblematic of where they consciously refer to a thing that I don't know that they either don't have it figured out and they don't want to commit to, or for whatever reason, it's just like, you know, because like it feels like a Reddit bait. It's like, the Antler Queen itself is the perfect Reddit bait. It's a concept that can mean anything. It's something that, like, who's going to win Succession on Succession? It's something that, like, keeps people talking. Who's the Pit Girl? Like, I'm glad I wasn't a big Pit Girl fixator, because I would feel like it's kind of a joke at this point, because okay, Pit Girl is one of four people, and at this point, does it matter? Like, maybe it matters next, but like, it's just, I don't know. It's like, why get all excited about that? I don't know.
Maybe I'm taking the bait here, but I think there's a possibility that Pit Girl was one of the ones that refused to draw. Maybe we've already seen that happen.
You get pitted?
We just didn't realize it. Well, no, you just get chased, you know, the same way you would if you drew the queen, but you get no choice.
Okay, well, that was my fear.
She's like running in a hospital gown or something. It's like, It seemed impromptu, right? Like, she wasn't prepared in any way to run from these people. Barefoot, like, yeah.
But they also already... Oh, it can't be, because she had the necklace on. That's the symbol of the wilderness. Yeah, so, like, unless they completely change that up, which they could, that's the annoying thing. It's like, Natalie could be... You know, because I wore the necklace and wasn't chosen, now only people who are not chosen get the necklace. I don't know. That's dumb, but there's a lot of stuff that's dumb that they're coming up with on the show, it seems like.
Yeah, you're right. Okay, there is what I think is a breach of protocol. We don't know the whole ritual yet. We don't know how it evolves and what it is in this timeline. I think there's a breach of etiquette and protocol with Lottie choosing to draw again. The way that she says again and the looks that she gets from the rest of the girls, including Van, who was the one calling for all of this, she gets a look like, this is not how we do it, Lottie, and then they go along with it anyway.
So my question, so I thought that too, but then they never supplied anything into that void, because like, okay, so if you do one round of draw, do you just put the deck away until the next day? And like,
yeah, the
you
wilderness
just, like,
chose none of us.
So like, huh? I guess that tracks. Because like, if you keep doing it long enough, someone will starve to death, and you get to eat them too.
Mm-hmm.
But do you think part of, okay, let me ask you this. This is another important part. Do you think part of the ritual is they eventually get around to burning cards, so it'll be less and less filler in the deck? Because I notice all the girls are throwing, all the women are throwing the cards into the fire as they're, now this could be just because this is a one and done and they know it.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, you're right. So that could be that this was seen as a mat, and that maybe that's another, all the girls are going along with the, because like, I think they're playing with the idea that these women are getting swept up again. Mm-hmm. With like a seeming thing of coincidences, and like they're thinking like, okay, well, there's 52 cards, we'll get rid of the queen, now there's 48, they'll put one back in, there's 49, you got a 1 in 49 chance times what, 6 of drawing a queen in the first round, and we might even draw one, then we can just put the cards away until the next night. But yeah, but it seems like they're gonna like pull until it's like playing Russian roulette until someone gets shot, you know. That's not how you're supposed to play it.
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly why everyone kind of just glosses over what I think is a breach of etiquette, but Shauna, it makes a lot of sense, because I think she's still trying to postpone whatever's going to happen here, right? She's still like buying time,
because she's like the shuffling for shuffling ages. And I also thought it's interesting how Ty pointedly asked Van, is this what you wanted to happen from the beginning? When she gets, and this is where I think Van, there's two points in this show where Van convinced me that she wanted this to happen. One is her crazy reaction to Ty canceling the site call, to the extent that I wonder if Dark Ty, I don't think Dark Ty was involved with that. And this scene here where Ty's looking at her is like, is this what you wanted all the time? But like, those looks came out of nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like
they needed... it never felt like these girls were committed to actually carrying out this ritual until they had masks and were actively chasing Shauna.
And it just got, they got caught up in it. And I don't know that I buy that for everybody. You know, even a guy, yeah, we don't. Mentioned last episode that there, I may be on feedback episode that the Vans always felt like the one that was like, okay, well, everybody, okay, you got the Dark Tie situation and you're butchering your animals. You killed your lover and now you've embroiled your whole family in a criminal scandal. You killed a person just straight up in your basement last episode. And Van, well, you know, you got shit too. And like Lottie did that again, where she went down the litany of everyone's sins and she got Van. And she's like, oh, Van, you're the one most of all. And I'm like, what the fuck does that mean?
It means something in context of the teen timeline, but they also, like I said at the beginning, need to connect this in the adult timeline. Make me feel like she's being transported back in time and feeling the same thing she felt back then, because I wasn't getting that from Van this entire time.
She says, like, I saw it in your eyes just now when we were choosing. And I buy it, because, like, I definitely saw, like, Lauren was doing something to, like, make her look like she was hungry.
But why?
Why? Because she's, hungry for life, maybe? But why did Van go from resignation to, oh my God, the wilderness can save me or make something of my life in less than 24 hours. Mm-hmm. I needed some more conversations.
Yeah, I never saw the connecting piece there.
But I don't think I ever really saw it in season one before, when she was, you know, spontaneously kneeling before. Did you see that there's this really long post on Reddit analyzing Van's behavior in the context of being a goalkeeper?
Oh, no.
Well, I didn't find it very persuasive, but I was like, I did okay. Find that like, there's people like, talking about like, that's a fundamentally different thing when you're a goalkeeper. Like everyone else on the team is trying to score points, is trying to win the game, but you are trying to save your team from calamity. You are the thing, you are trying to keep, you know, you're trying to keep your goal. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I don't know.
And they play with that stuff, right? I mean, Jackie was the captain of the team and the leader, and they had her be that for a while until.
But again, it's not enough. I feel like if this is what the showrunners are going for, they're handing me a disassembled assault rifle and expecting me to believe that a character can just put it back together without, you know, like just counting on, oh, they probably have training or whatever. And I don't know. I need to see it. I need to see, you know, like Van saying something like, you guys don't never understood me. I'm the goalkeeper and you're the striker and the blah and the left quarter fielder. And
Lottie is definitely football.
The Royale
life,
McCheese,
right?
And only a goalkeeper can understand.
Yeah, I don't know. Not my favorite part of this episode for sure. So Matt finds Kevin's body in the trunk of his car. Walter runs in. He shoots Kevin with Matt's gun and gives Matt a choice. He can claim that Kevin was a corrupt cop and be a hero, or the information linking Kevin to Adam's murder could instead point to him. Also, the cops are on their way right now, and Jeff sees all this go down from the woods.
Are we supposed to understand that this is like a choice of running or submitting? Because it happens right after they explain this, and like it's now that I'm looking at it, it's like, you know, here's three dudes talking about the inevitability of these choices being made right on the back of, you know, Lottie and them like the turning on Shauna and giving her a choice to run or submit. I don't know. There might be something there.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know that we get enough information to really understand how this plays out. The next time we see Kevin, or sorry, Matt, I think he's just like, it's the very end of the episode. He's leaned up against a police car, kind of crying while he's being interviewed. And so here's the thing about Matt. He's not one to be blackmailed, I don't think. Callie has tried it numerous times with false information. Walter might be better at it, but I don't think Kevin just suddenly submits to this. I think...
You mean Matt?
Matt.
Yeah.
Yes. Matt's not that guy. Matt's going to go do whatever it takes to figure out who this Walter guy is and try and bring him down.
Counterpoint, he might get around to that, but I kind of do buy Matt as that guy. I think Matt is...
You think so? Matt's the guy who will taste the juices from a condom because he's pretty sure it's not actual spooge.
Yeah, fair point. You're right. That shows a certain amount of fortitude, I guess, or
single-minded kind of insanity, right? Like, I don't think Matt's that guy.
Okay, let's talk about all the goofy things. So Matt comes up, opens the thing, and says, oh, Jesus Christ, sees a partner. Elijah Woods comes flying out of the woods, grabs his service weapon, and Matt kind of goes, hey! And he pumps three, four rounds into Kevin. Elijah Woods not wearing gloves, right?
I think he might be.
Was he wearing gloves? God damn it.
I think so.
Because that was one thing. It's like you just put your fingerprints on the guy's weapon.
Right.
But like, I feel like people, you can tell whether wounds were put post-mortem or mortem. Uh-huh. And you could for sure tell that they were like shot downward at an angle while a person was lying down. And like, there's a narrative, like I like this line, like Elijah Woods gets some great fucking lines where it's like, well, this is a narrative and I need you to try to yes and it a little bit more than you're doing right now. Like that stuff was all great. But the ultimate situation where it's like, okay, they have convinced me that Elijah Woods is a master hacker and he could do all this stuff. But if Elijah Woods ran out of the forest in all purple and shot this dead body and tried, like, I do think that Matt would be like, get the fuck out of here.
Mm-hmm.
Like, again, there's like, we know these things about Walter, but why would the small town cop who, you know, thinks that he is the master of the universe, why would he submit so quickly to that?
Yeah, I want to say it's because, like, in the moment he's bamboozled, right? The situation is so strange. The guy has his gun. He seems a little unhinged. I could maybe see like Matt in that moment, not knowing what to do, but like, I just don't think that sticks.
Yeah. And I wish they'd shown him as being like, you know, I kind of wish they'd shown him being frightful that Cassie's gambit would work. You know, to kind of show that maybe his partner, Kevin, bucking him up. But come on, man. No one's going to believe that. You didn't, you know, But like, that's not what I got out of that.
I saw a guy who sniffs out bullshit,
but also
and doesn't care that bullshit is out there because he knows the truth.
But also, Kevin told Walter that you and my partner would get along really well because you both have unquestionable police methods. And is that enough for, like, this is kind of like the cop work equivalent of guys thinking they have weird balls, that this guy is self-conscious because he knows that he skirts the, and, like, you know, Elijah would, like, is this threat a little bit more compelling? Because he knows for a fact he didn't fuck Cassie. But, like, and he has color.
But he has a rep around the precinct as the guy who, like, is
colors
kind of
outside the lines a little bit. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. Maybe, but again, maybe. I feel like I'm being handed the field strip rifle here.
Yeah, you're really doing a lot of heavy lifting for the show.
Yeah, for the missing episode.
Fan fiction.
That, it's looking like we've got.
Yeah. So Callie runs into the hunt and shoots Lottie in the arm, stopping the chase. Ty confesses that they called off the psych team. Lottie claims the wilderness has done things for them. And then Lisa also shows up with a gun. I'm going to stop here because things get like pretty jumbled at the end. And I'm just going to cut up those pieces and paste them together. So Van in this scene is like saying, yeah, we can't commit Lottie. When Ty confesses she called off the psych team, Van says, we made her like this, right? She's like this because of us. I don't know if that's true. Lottie has always been the girl who sat in the backseat of the car seeing visions of horrible death.
Yeah, this isn't track because you're right. It isn't literally true.
Van might think it's true. So I don't want to like say, oh, she wouldn't say that necessarily, but that we know that that's not true.
And also we took a person who is uniquely vulnerable to this kind of bullshit and we just fed into it because we were kids and we wanted to believe. And like, I mean, obviously,
fair,
I think
Lottie had a big hand in that.
It does seem to like if you have a person that has like a severe mental illness and they can get treatment and be better, it seems reasonable to assume that you could do the worst. You could do like the opposite of treatment and make them worse. So like, yeah, I don't think it's healthy to like feed into someone's paranoid delusions or someone's, you know, like I don't think that's the way to go. And maybe she's feeling culpable for that, but like the thing is like this is Van like not being honest, because Van's acting like, oh well, you know, I was all kind of like going along with it all the time, even back. And I don't think Van was just going along with shit. I think Van was a true committed believer, not all the time, but when they got hungry. There's even this line here about that the wilderness is not evil. It's just hungry like us. And I feel like that's the key to understanding all this, is that people do crazy things to survive. You can be so hungry that you would do stuff that you would swear that you would never do on your worst day. And that's Van. And this is like the wilderness is just their fig leaf to cover their own amoral actions.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. What doesn't make sense here is Van's argument. Van is saying, we can't commit this person. We can't commit Lottie because we made her like this, essentially, by playing into her delusions.
Yeah.
So you're trying to help her by doing what? Playing into her delusions.
Yeah.
What are you arguing for here? That this is somehow that honoring the wilderness as adults is somehow going to make things good for Lottie and for the rest of you?
We have to figure this out ourselves. What is the end goal of figuring it out? Lottie not being insane? Lottie not being committed?
Right.
Everyone still breathing at
and
the end of the night?
Is this the like, path to that? Leaning into her insanity by conducting rituals that will end up in the murder of yet another one of your friends? Like, none of this makes sense. Even when you break down her argument as presented on screen, it just does not make sense.
Yeah, that's the real problem. Is like some of this stuff in isolation can work in a moment with the performance and the dialogue, but then you think of like, okay, but why? What is the, you know, again, what does Van think success is here? If she's the goalkeeper, what is her goal that she's keeping? And that's where it just really breaks down. And it could be that we just don't know enough. But like, why don't we know enough about
right
this conversation
you're
these women
playing
are
moments
having.
That I need to know enough about in order yeah. for them to work.
Like they're
but
so heavily
that information.
In their personal code and experiences that at the end of two seasons I can't decipher it. Well, that's a problem.
Yep, I agree. They're have kind we talked of putting about the cart before the horse on some of this stuff?
Have we gone back to 97 when Lottie comes out of her bedroom and Van's telling a story? Have we got to that part yet?
Yeah, let's do that now. Okay. So I'm going to go. There are two threads here. There's a 96 that goes to the end of the episode and the current day that goes to the end of the episode. And they're kind of intercut, but I'm going to split them up here.
Okay.
So let's talk about 1996. The girls welcome Lottie back to the land of living here. Van tells them all a story about the wilderness as Coach sneaks around outside with a rope. Lottie claims that she can't hear the wilderness anymore and appoints Nat the new leader, and Nat accepts the role and everyone accepts her. You know what? Let's stop there because there's kind of the end of the episode is a moment that okay. we can talk about in isolation. So yeah, this is the story part.
And this is where I feel like this is from the better written version and not as chopped up version of the show, because like this stuff tracks really well and it works thematically that like mm-hmm. Van is telling a literal narrative about this just so story about this cabin and how it's taken care of them and how it was lonely and how it wanted them there. And the coach is about to destroy their narrative. Because somebody outside is going to come and burn, like, oh, you think this cabin is here and it's there to protect? Well, I'm going to burn it down. I think mm-hmm. there's something really interesting about Walter's narrative and this narrative and the narrative that the women are telling themselves. But it's like, it just doesn't quite come together because thematically it works. Like, if I'm just having a conversation with you, I tell you, oh, yeah, Yellow Jackets made this really interesting thing about narratives. But, like, specifically, when you try to tie it to the episode, it kind of falls apart. And I think it's because of the pacing. I think it's because we're missing some information that maybe these scenes were written with thinking that you would have in hindsight, or they wanted to make it intentionally more mysterious, so they took that stuff out. But for whatever reason, it's like, and again, something that seems like it should work really well, and it just doesn't. And it's a shame.
Yeah, I like the beginning of the story. She doesn't get to finish it because Lottie kind of stands up and interrupts. But
and
like,
the narrative is destroyed. But I think it's like intentional yeah. too. It's.
Yeah, totally. But I could see this as Van kind of channeling the wilderness here, right? Listening to the wilderness. It hears us and we hear it.
And it's a purpose.
This might be the literal beginning. Like the wilderness may have literally built this cabin, if you want to go supernatural, right? To attract people sure. there to do whatever it's doing. And or maybe just not to be lonely, to have friends. I don't know. I think there's something creepy and interesting and like otherworldly about that that was really compelling.
Yeah, and I that like Lottie said, you know, hey, I was the only one that knew how to listen, which possible code for I was the only one that was off medications and mentally ill. Mm-hmm. I've taught you all now how to listen, so now that's not the important part. Now we need a strong leader, and that strong leader is Nat. And they pan yeah. around, and you can see like Misty and Shauna are hungry for it. Uh-huh. They're like, oh God, oh my God, this is me. And Ty was also in there. There's like a three reaction shot where it goes like Ty, Misty, Shauna. Mm-hmm. And then Natalie's chosen. And she kisses the ring. Let's talk about the different reactions. So Lottie just obviously submits to Nat's authority. Misty is extra about it. She does this elaborate curtsy. Mm-hmm.
So does
Travis. Travis gives her her heart. Yeah, Van kind of like cuddles her arm. Shauna is conflicted. She goes up there and is like confused, and she doesn't. She kind of like gives her a nod. Mm-hmm. And is this the thing I've been waiting for all season? Because I thought this is what we're going to get in the adult we're going to get an adult struggle for supremacy. Are they setting up this spring thaw, queens coming out and stinging each other to death, like metaphorically, because obviously they can't die, but...
Yeah, I don't know. It's clear they're definitely setting Nat up to kind of take this to the next level, right? But I mean, the stuff we've seen at the end and knowing Nat is the leader now, and knowing how fucked up Nat is, because... Like, people talk about who's the most fucked up Yellowjacket. I mean, from the very beginning, Nat's been very fucked up. And we thought that a lot of that was based on the stuff that happened before the wilderness with her, her dad and stuff.
Sure.
But that's not necessarily all of it. A lot of it, it could still be to come between this winter and when they get rescued. So.
How unhinged is it that Shauna is still processing all this through this very teenage, like, you know, she's writing her journal like, you know, I thought it was Jackie who was keeping me from feeling unheard and unseen. But turns out the wilderness is a bitch and they don't like that stuff. Seems insane to me that you would take that tone and voice and that kind of journaling into this situation. But she's doing it. That's why I say, like, there's got to, like, there is a lot of jealousy and self-esteem and just, like self-loathing that's Shauna's got to deal with if she's going to continue to be the team's butcher. It seems like she is.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they're definitely writing her as a teen. All those things are in there.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Let's go back to current day real quick, and then we'll talk about the cabin burning.
Okay.
Misty springs into action with a syringe. This is after Lisa comes up with a gun. She tries to take out Lisa, but Nat jumps in the way and gets killed instead. And as Nat is dying, she sees Javi, Lottie, her younger self, all telling her to let the darkness in, saying we've been here for years. Then the authorities show up. Walter tells Misty he's taking care of the Adam Martin situation. Misty, I think, kind of is too distraught to register that over killing Nat. And Jeffrey unites with his family, finds out that Natalie's dead. Lottie claims the wilderness is pleased, and she's taken by the authorities, and Ty promises they'll come check on her.
Yeah. What did you make of the what Lottie asserts that Natalie was always the wilderness's favorite? Because up to this point, that was an interesting piece of information to me. Because, like, I wouldn't say that was true.
Lottie is the wilderness's favorite? I mean...
No, she said not Nat was. Lottie said Nat was the wilderness's favorite.
Right, right.
So you're always the wilderness's favorite.
We just don't have the context for it, right? I mean, that's the thing. There are... Well, I guess always implies from the very beginning.
Say,
so
we're
like
a third, we're a quarter of the way through the wilderness experience. Always, I don't know. And then there's nothing that this is just in time storytelling. It's something that they want to assert, but like I don't think there is any evidence to imply that that's true.
So I've seen many a narrative spun that with like siblings, where one sibling acts out. And get this is the Jesse Pinkman story, right? Where one sibling acts out and gets in trouble, and the parents like get pissed off and try their best to correct their behavior and fail, and then the little brother who has always been, you know, straight laced, never got into trouble, comes in and says, "You were always our parents' favorite."
Yeah,
that is one way to look at the wilderness, seeing Nat as the favorite. Is like Nat's always been the troublemaker in the wilderness's mind, right? She's the one who didn't believe. She's the one who's talking shit about the wilderness. And so it's fixated on her. Maybe that's what she means.
Okay. Again, feels a little partially disassembled rifle, but I guess that does track from a certain point of view.
Yeah, it's from a certain point of view for sure.
We need to hide this body. We'll be back right after this. I think the lady in the tree is watching you. Welcome back to more Yellow Jackets. Are we positive that Natalie's dead?
Yep. I mean, she's currently dead. Will she stay that way? I don't know, but...
at first I thought, well, because like, do we actually hear? Yeah, when the paramedic comes up, they actually say that she's dead, right? She died of an overdose. Because like, I remember very strongly thinking as soon as Misty stabbed Natalie, it's like, oh, well, Misty is going to have a shot that would incapacitate a normal person, but because Natalie is habituated to drugs and whatnot, that it's not going to, you know, she didn't use enough and she's going to narrowly survive. But then, you know, by the time Lottie shows up on the plane and tells her to give it up, like let it in, that seemed like that was that. But
I think that's that. And I trust Misty when she says Nat's, she killed her best friend.
Anything we can glean from the in-between place? This is Natalie on the down plane. We see people that are dead there, but we see people that we also know are still alive there. We saw her own self there. Like, I don't know that you can, you know, draw too many conclusions from this death vision here.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's just that, right? A vision. It's not real. I get a Final Destination vibe for sure. We've talked about that before, but this felt like a faded kind of thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, not much more than that.
Yeah. Lots of stuff for enterprising police forces to investigate here. Multiple bodies, an insane cult leader.
Yeah, with poisons of all types just kind of hanging around.
Your prime suspects in the middle of it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But because that's the other thing. It's like, do you buy that a police officer can assert something is true enough to back the fuck off the fella? Because that's why I guess why I was going to Sean, the detective suitor thing from We Own These Streets or We Own This City. Is that sometimes, like, if an official narrative is embraced by a police officer and they just assert it, like, there is this, you know, kind of thin blue line effect where the other cops are just going to naturally go along with it?
Mm-hmm.
Like, if someone outside the department been like, hey, look, here's the deal. There's my part. This guy killed his butt. They'd be like, no fucking way, pal. But the fact that it's this one, their brother officer is doing it.
Yeah, I could see it.
But do you think that Matt was a joke in his own police department? Because I kind of got that opinion that Kevin didn't respect him. He's his partner.
Yeah, he's kind of newish too, right? He's not seasoned. So he probably doesn't know people very well. They're probably like a little.
I think he's a newly minted detective anyway.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, I get the impression that he might not be taken super seriously by everyone.
So maybe that. I just don't know. I don't know.
You're grasping at straws. Trying to find a way for it all to make sense.
I am because it just doesn't. It really doesn't. I don't see how they make this make sense going forward the next year. I don't. Like I said, I think there's ways that you could do it. Part of it might just be leaning into slight retcons and de-emphasizing things that aren't working and emphasizing things that are. But like.
Yeah, they play this as a bittersweet resolution to the Adam Martin thing, and I wasn't necessarily buying it.
But why did they have to get the cops this hot and heavy after them? I just feels like there's so much things that I don't like about this plot line. It made kind of Misty and them look stupid when I thought that they were going to be like these cold-eyed, dead-eyed serial killers that do everything right. And the cops are on their ass from the jump. And because the cops are on their ass, they got to come up with the counter. Like, it feels like a lot of this stuff, we spent so much time with this Matt and Kevin shit that ultimately doesn't really matter. I just don't get it. Yeah. Like, why did we ended last season with me thinking that the cops wouldn't even necessarily investigate this shit. But it was like from the jump. And that's the worst part of the finale, the resolution of that. So it's like, fuck, guys.
Yeah, we'll see. I don't know. So it's disappointing to me, this whole thing with Walter and the hacking, because we don't actually get to see any of it happen. We don't see how smart Walter is. We're just told by Walter that he's fucking smart, right? Yeah. Like, they did a great job with this leading up to this. Like, I always felt Walter was one step ahead of Misty in every regard. But here, it doesn't... It feels like they're trading on that reputation that they've earned with Walter before to just say, go with it. Mm. What I wanted to see is how exactly did Walter pull this off? How smart is he? Like, think of the thing that I didn't think of. Plant the evidence in the perfect, clever location that points all fingers back at either Kevin or Matt, depending on which switch he flips. I wanted to see all that happening, and that would have made me understand and respect Walter as the mastermind hacker. To just assert it here, I was willing to go with them when they were asserting that he could do that against guys like Randy, but not against guys working in the PD.
Because he was so clumsy with even the attempt on Randy. Maybe that was the Misty fucking with his flow. But I can't agree more.
They did
so much telling, not showing. Like, they're doing so much work with, oh, I'm your Moriarty, and us assuming everything that goes. And, you know, to be fair, he did show that he had the ability to, like, what, hack into the CCTV of a no-tell motel. And he was able to track Misty's, like, finding, like, you know, get information, inside information on her. But, like, I mean, I don't know. It feels like Misty's a pretty hard target. But most of it was, yeah. And I guess maybe you're supposed to think
again,
these
the
are
only
small
glimpse,
town cops.
The only glimpse we really see of Walter being very good at what he does is when he shows up at Misty's work. Yes. I think that's where we can, like, respect Walter for his methods. But everywhere else, it's kind of just said, Walter has great methods.
Yeah. And a part of the really, you know, you can imagine, like, you know, he took months to, like, research and find out all about the facility and how they could do ins and outs and how they do the tours. And he found the old woman that he could use as the stage grandma or mother and all that. And but, like, he is kind of this, like, this the cult honey compound is something he came up with on, what, 24 hours notice?
Yeah,
it's a lot harder to think that he's got so much information, because I don't know, maybe he started looking into Matt and to Kevin a day before that, but, like, good Lord, this is light speed Moriarty type work.
Sure. I just want to know how he did it. I'm curious.
Yeah. Yeah,
anyway, let's talk about the final scene here. 1996, Sean is writing in her diary when she smells smoke. Coach has barred the doors and set the cabin on fire, and the girls smash their way out, carrying what they can, and watch as their only shelter burns to the ground. Boy, man, this is disruptive for a lot of reasons.
Yeah.
It's disruptive to the wilderness, who presumably built this cabin to attract friends because it was lonely. It's also disruptive to their survival. Yeah, fair, I am. But Coach, I'm with you. I feel you, Coach. I feel like this is not the worst decision to make.
It's an extreme response, but you know what the situation is here, Jim? It's pretty fucking extreme.
It's pretty fucking extreme.
And from Coach's perspective, I don't think he thinks he can peaceably coexist with them.
Nope.
Like, he knows at some level that Ty has to know where these geothermal vents are.
Mm-hmm.
And it's only a matter of time before they'll find him and eat him too.
Yeah. I'm with him. This is self-defense in a sick and twisted way.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. It is interesting to see, like, I love how the chorus goes crazy when the coach starts, you know, burning them down. I thought it was interesting that Natalie was the first one out by people's insistence. She's already taking Lottie's place of supremacy.
Mm-hmm.
I don't get why Van orders Ty out as the last to leave, because she's, I guess, the goalkeeper. I noticed that, like, when I was looking at all the girls' reactions, they all are shell-shocked, but at the very end, Lottie starts laughing hysterically, which I thought was a nice touch. But there's a couple things that I want to talk about in terms of next season. There's only 9 left. And only Jin, Mari, Melissa, and Akilah can actually be killed. And I don't think we really care enough about any of them. Like, they've done the most track laying for Akilah, but, like, all the others are kind of question marks or I'm actively antagonistic to. The whole Pit Girl thing seems to be super beside the point. So that's a problem. Like, there is not much puzzle box that we care about in the 1996-97 timeline, which has been, I think, the stronger of this season. They also have this really weird like crane shot that seems to goes up and up, and they show that there's like this black smoke bellowing into the air. Are they suggesting that maybe that's something that could be seen from a distance?
I was wondering.
It's nighttime though.
It's nighttime, and who knows where they are.
Very remote.
Yeah. And they're not still searching for these bodies actively, right? They're not out there with planes flying overhead going, well, maybe if they got off course here, they could have gone down there.
Well, we also know that there's at least one more winter. So, like, they're nowhere near being rescued.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
But you're right. They're probably not actively searching the area, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's no chance they spot this and get rescued. Which brings me to another question. Like, they've only got a handful of people who they can kill. I assume once we get out of the winter, it's going to be a lot more subdued for them. And we're going to have a period where there's some reflection on the things they did during the winter. And then we're going to get to the next winter and it's all going to happen times 10, right?
Well, I mean, I think in the spring, there's going to be one more like breach where the girls go fight and squabble and they fight for supremacy. And there's a lot of recriminations and like, well, you're crazy and you did. Mm-hmm. But yeah, mm-hmm. I think that that's broadly how it's going to go.
Because you just don't have enough people left to eat to sustain you through a whole year.
Do you think that we just saw the last of the like really bad? Because like it almost strains my belief that these girls can survive another couple weeks of winter in their state with the clothes that they've got and the shelter that they don't have. And it's one thing if you had all summer to prepare, but like how the fuck do you prepare for sub-zero conditions when you got the clothes on your back?
And the blankets you were able to grab. I did like that they were grabbing the warmest shit they could find.
Yeah.
It's remarkably rational thinking in an emergency situation.
Yeah.
But so what could they do? I guess they have the meat shack, right? You could pile some girls into that.
There's only 9 left.
Keep
so
it warm.
It's, yeah. Are they all going to live in a geothermal vents?
Yeah. Ty might be able to take them to other cave trees, which is going to force Coach out, right? I mean, that's the scary part for Coach.
Well,
is he inadvertently left himself nowhere to hide.
So also, Nat and Travis know where another geothermal vent is. They found it and marked it on the map. They didn't know its significance at the time.
I still don't think they do. Like, Coach doesn't say, oh, Javi was hiding underneath one of the trees marked
with
the symbol.
You're right.
He says, I know where Javi was hiding.
You're right.
And that's it.
You're right. I don't know if there's enough for them to
put that
together.
But Ty could take them to one, for sure. Like you
but
said.
Maybe if Ty and Nat somehow have enough information, they could put it together.
Uh-huh. Maybe.
The other forward-looking thing is right before they pack Lottie off into the hospital wagon and Van and Ty are, you know, giving her like, oh, yeah, we'll check in after you. She says, we gave what you wanted. It's pleased. You'll see. And she looks at Van. Is Van's cancer going to miraculously go into remission next season?
It's possible.
Because also, I don't know what other effect possibly could, you know... Unless the wilderness is going to quash the legal beef. It's not Walter so much as the wilderness.
Yeah. The wilderness has a team of lawyers.
And Nat was
going to send a cease and desist.
Mean if Nat was the wilderness's favorite and she wasn't supposed to die? Because I don't think... Well, of course, there's anything. Yeah, I was sweating through week 6 and 7, but these last 2 weeks, I'm getting more and more convinced that team rationality is the supreme. We're gonna prevail. We're gonna prevail, people.
It's possible. This could be the wilderness, bringing Nat to it. You know, when you die, maybe you. I don't know, have some stronger connection to the wilderness, if this is, like, supernatural.
Yeah. Any other points we can think of that are going to be germane to next season 3? If, guys, it's like, Showtime did renew this for 2 full seasons, 2 and 3. I wonder if they're kicking themselves thinking they should have filmed them back-to-back, but...
Well, especially with the writer's strike.
Because that's the thing. Yeah. I would say I'm about 50-50 whether we get another season after I looked at the ratings, people's reaction this season, and the fact that there is a perfect out in terms of a writer strike for HBO to like get out of the contracts and all that kind of stuff. What is your percentage of certainty that we're going to get another season of this?
50-50, man.
Dude, and I will say that this would sting a lot.
I'm talking
like,
after season three, right? Because season three is already gonna happen.
I don't know what will, dude.
The writer's strike is
a wild
question, but there are contracts already, so they'll either
red
have to pay their way
queen.
Out of it. Yeah,
but there might be some force majeure where it's like, well, it's, you know, like that's like
sure.
You know, what the writer strike waited for would last for 2 years. Can these women not go and do a stage play because they're under contract? Like, there's got to be. So I think there'd be a way for them to get out. And I'm a little nervous that they would. And it would sting like 1899. Because that's the thing is we just had 1899 do this to us.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, God damn. It's like as much as I think that the latter half of season two suffered for some problems, I really want them to see if they can redeem themselves or if this is all part of the plan. You know, that's also possible that we're being.
I just
want to
know if it's supernatural or not.
Yeah. Yeah, me too. Because I want to be proven right. That's my favorite thing. And if they don't do more show, I can't. Okay. I can't. I'll never be able to crow and claim victory.
It's true.
It's the worst. Do you have anything? So otherwise, I'm going to start teasing people for feedback.
Yeah, let's do it.
Because yellowjacketsofbaldmove.com, do you have takes? Are you optimistic about season three? Are you 50-50? Are you 90-10? Do you think this is still a good show? Are you over it? Do you buy that Walter is a mastermind hacker? How many disassembled rifles were you asked to assemble in this episode? yellowjacketsofbaldmove.com. We want to hear it from you. We'll be back later this week to wrap up our season two coverage of this. We're this week spinning up our coverage for Star Trek Strange New Worlds. We've got a bevy of shows coming and returning in June and July that we're excited about, including Foundation, I know is one that we're definitely going to be doing. So if this is your last stop on the Yellow Jackets train, well, I hope you... subscribe to us at Bald Move Pulp and Bald Move Prestige. That's where all of our content winds up because we're going to be doing some cool stuff the rest of the year. We got Spider-Man Through the Spider-Verse, first run movie we're reviewing this week, tons of other stuff. And you can follow all of the things we're up to at twitter.com/baldmove. And if you've liked our coverage this year and you'd want more Bald Move content, ad-free Bald Move content, I highly recommend supporting us at support.baldmove.com. All right, you got a couple days to get your feedback in. yellowjackets@baldmove.com. We'll be back later in the week to wrap up this season. Until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
See ya.